This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. It's a bittersweet day for us here at KUOW as we say goodbye to a legend. For the last 37 years, one reporter has brought listeners to what's felt like every corner of the state as he's broken news, covered politics, the environment, and told countless stories about the fascinating people around us. Whether he was covering the state legislature or tracking wild cougars, Tom Bonsi has brought Pacific Northwest stories to life for listeners and been a source of countless driveway moments throughout the years. But after 37 years of diligent reporting, Tom is retiring. Today is his last day at KUOW, and we couldn't let him go without honoring that career. And Tom Bonsi is here with me now. Tom, thanks so much for joining us on, I can't believe I'm saying this, your very last day at KUOW. Hello.
It's an honor to share this last moment with you and of all our fine listeners.
Yes, most of all of the folks who have been listening to you over the years. Like I mentioned, Tom, at the top, you've built a solid career reporting on issues, people, and communities that make up the Pacific Northwest. Your retirement is going to be an adjustment for listeners. Your voice has been in their ears for so many years. Why are you stepping away from the microphone now?
Well, the short answer is because I've saved enough that I can retire, but it's a combination of many reasons, really, and a lot of them similar to other retirees. I have an elderly parent who needs more and more care from family to stay in his own home. I want to travel more. I'm looking forward to freedom from deadlines and obligations because I've been a reporter pretty much nonstop since the week after I graduated from college, which I hate to say is a long time ago. And there's gardening as well. There's a green belt behind my house that's totally choked with invasive ivy. And so that could be a retirement project for the next 10 years, too.
Watch out, local ivy. Tom Bonsi is going to have a little bit more time on his hands. So tell us a little bit about how you got into reporting in the first place, Tom. When did your passion for radio really begin?
Well, it was completely by accident, really, or serendipity, if you will. I went to college. I'm from Seattle, but I went to Carleton College in Minnesota, thinking maybe I'd be a diplomat or maybe a biologist, because my father was an oceanographer at the university for many years. But I was hanging out with a roommate one night, freshman year, without, you know, a clear plan of what I wanted to do. And so my roommate said he was going to go to the organizing meeting for the college radio station, which Carleton had a little student, entirely student-run radio station where the format changed every 2 hours. I don't know if your school had this. A lot of them do. The thing was, I wasn't that into doing a music show for 2 hours, but at the end of the organizing meeting, a person stood up, said she was the news director, and if you just wanted a smaller obligation, they did newscasts twice a day. And so I said, oh, yeah, I could do that. And so they assigned me the news at midnight on Tuesdays. And I got such a thrill from that little bit of reading wire service copy, you know, national news headlines, Minnesota news, the baseball score and tomorrow's weather, that I couldn't fall asleep till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So that was a sign that maybe I should pursue that angle a little more.
That is so relatable, knowing that you get that little jolt of adrenaline just from even a small time slot at midnight on a Tuesday. And that led to this passion and lifelong passion for radio. Tom, for years, you've been a regular presence for KUOW listeners. What brought you to this station in particular?
That's a continuation of the college story, because as I mentioned, this was a rather unprofessional student radio station. And once I figured out this was a passion that I wanted to pursue, I applied for summer internships, because Carleton College didn't have and still doesn't have a journalism program per se. So I applied at some radio stations back home, and KUOW fortunately was one of them that said, yeah, we could give you, you know, maybe come in 4 days a week and you could work for free in the summer and learn radio. And then I had to have a summer job, though, so I spent the other 3 days of the week making cotton candy at the Woodland Park Zoo my first summer back home. And I had 2 days off the whole summer, and it was still one of the best summers of my life because I learned at the feet of legends at KOW, including the recently retired Marcy Silman, who was back then the person editing my scripts some days and whipping me into shape.
Another legendary KOW voice. So did the sticky cotton candy prepare you for reporting on the sticky issues of Washington politics?
It didn't quite, but I did 5 internships in the end during college. And one of those places ended up giving my first job afterwards, which was a public radio station in southern Minnesota. And I covered the Minnesota legislature for them and just for a couple years, and then came back home in 1991 for a month-to-month renewable contract to cover Olympia for Washington State NPR stations, including KOW. And that's where I still am.
What did those early years of reporting and mentorship teach you, Tom? What do you remember from those early years of being a reporter?
One of the things I most strongly remember, especially from my mentors in Minnesota and then in Seattle and Olympia, is how hard they really tried to drill into me to be even-handed. And in the case of covering the state capitol, that, you know, I'd be talking to listeners in liberal Seattle and conservative Eastern Washington, and you want to be credible to everyone who's listening, because indeed, as I found out when I went around the state, that, you know, people were tuning in on, you know, wheat fields in Eastern Washington and on the bus ride to downtown Seattle. And it just helps to, you know, hold that audience, to be a broadcaster in the best sense, broadly speaking to people across the state, that it wasn't clear if what my own biases might be. And then the other thing I would tell my younger self, if I could go back in time, would be to be humble about what you think you know, particularly in my context, about predicting what the future of the policy choices or the outcomes might be of the policy choices being debated, because you don't really know. And now when I look back, I've seen so often as like, oh, that didn't turn out as bad as people predicted it would, again and again. So, you know, just try and stick to what you know for sure, and maybe edit out the apocalyptic predictions of how terrible or great this thing will really be.
Sometimes it's what you don't know. That's the greatest thing that a young reporter can understand, is there will be implications and results of something that you can't possibly predict. And maybe some of the worst predictions and the best predictions, neither one of them is going to come true. Tom, you've been known for your creative ways to keep listeners engaged and really try to give folks a bit of the unexpected. How were you able to do that with your job covering the state legislature?
Well, it was hard. And one thing I've struggled with for many years, and I think a lot of other Olympia reporters do as well, is how to get listeners and readers to engage with the legislature and legislative news. I mean, it feels really important what we're doing here. For many years, especially now, state legislatures are where the action is. And you know, we're the laboratories of democracy. The solutions to society's biggest problems are often being worked out first at the state level, because, you know, forget about Congress getting much done with all the, you know, gridlock in the other Washington. But I bet if you and I went out on the sidewalk today in Seattle and stopped 10 random people and asked them to name their state senator and their 2 state reps, how many people do you think would have the answer? I mean, maybe 3 out of 10 on a good day. So
that would be a good day. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I felt the need to have to bring something extra to the table to make the news from this place, from my beat, breakthrough. And sometimes that would mean going back, leaving Olympia and going to the place where the issue maybe germinated from, or sometimes it meant inventing a gag, like with the obligatory annual state legislative preview story, putting that to music.
And we want to take a listen to one of those musical previews, which listeners may remember. This one is from 2002, when the state was facing a large budget deficit.
If you're the chairman of the budget committee anywhere, you're going to have a waiting room full of people asking for things. State Senator Lisa Brown's office is no exception, but the Spokane Democrat, the Ways and Means chair, has an unusual way of telegraphing her mood. She calls it the album of the week.
Here's the album cover frame that you put the album cover in, mm-hmm. and then it hangs up in here, out here. So when people are waiting to come in, they can look at the album cover of the week and speculate on the title, the music, the theme.
Next, Senator Brown thumbs through her well-worn record collection for a suitable soundtrack for session 2002. She owns a vintage turntable to audition songs and tries out Blue by Joni Mitchell.
It's sad.
Brown will eventually need to achieve a meeting of the minds on spending with House Appropriations Chair Helen Summers, whose taste runs more toward opera. Summers says her session soundtrack begins with an aria from Madame Butterfly. It evokes notions of pain and sacrifice.
The drama, the operatic drama of Olympia budget negotiations. Tom, you spent years covering the state government. I mean, as we've been talking about, it's so important, but often it's a beat that gets overlooked, or maybe it's relegated to somewhere rookie reporters kind of cut their teeth in the business. What have you noticed about state house reporting and how it has changed over the years?
Well, I was definitely one of those tenderfoot reporters when I got here in my early 20s. But the interesting thing then is, I think it's less so now. This was a prestige beat for the larger news outlets, probably the majority of whom are no longer physically present at the state capitol with the bureau. So there were probably 15 full-time Olympia reporters when I started here in the early 1990s. This past legislative session, there were, I think, six people in based at the state capitol full-time Olympia press corps. So,
wow, 15 to 6. That's incredible.
And I mean, during the legislative session, if there was something big happening, there'd be maybe in the old days 30 reporters on the scene. So very competitive, all of us. Yeah, I mean, there was a little more PAC journalism there too. But it's, far less competition now at the state capitol and many fewer reporters. But I will say I had a privilege last Friday to host a launch party for the Washington State Standard at my house, which is a new online outfit that just launched to cover Olympia. And they're instantly the largest news outlet here by having three reporters and an editor on the scene. So I think we've hit bottom and are coming back in a new form. Most of the newspapers are not here anymore, but there's new online outlets like the Washington Observer as well. It's doing some good stuff, Crosscut as well. But it's a different beast than when we started, as probably happens to people who do the same profession for a long, long time.
Tom, you've reported on more than just the state legislature, of course. You've covered breaking news, Olympic sports, human interest stories of all kinds. You even joined a cougar tagging operation for a story. I want to take a listen to that.
This cat is notorious for choosing big trees and going all the way to the top of them.
The biologists fire a tranquilizer dart.
Attaboy!
The cat begins to climb higher.
Stay. Stay.
But as the drug takes effect, it loses its grip and falls from a height of about 7 stories.
Here he comes! Ooh, he missed it then.
A snowbank breaks the fall. The mountain lion bounces to its feet and tears off into the woods. The chase is on again.
Wow, that's action-packed reporting right there. Is there something about this wider scope of reporting that appeals to you as a journalist? Was it intentional to be searching for just these wide-ranging topics to bring stories to life on?
Well, that was one of my more memorable trips of the last 2 decades, probably, getting up and close with a live wild cougar. But I mean, journalists get into the business for different reasons, and some of them are trying to change the world. My motivation over time was, I think, simpler than that. It's just don't be boring, Tom. And I had the kind of a motivational nightmare that, and you might remember from the old days, there were traffic helicopters or traffic reporters and airplanes circling over Seattle, and I could place myself in the co-pilot seat and for the morning commute and have, KUOW in one ear and be looking out at, wall-to-wall cars on the floating bridges and hear my story from the state legislature, come on, and Tom Bonsi reports on the committee, did this and that. And I can see everyone at the same time, all reaching for the scan button at the same time to find something more interesting.
No.
That was motivational to not be boring and go find, you know, cougars being shot with tranquilizer darts and falling out of tall trees. Or you know, figuring out how to put the budget to opera music and so forth. And I hope that worked. It, you know, people definitely would tell you what their driveway moments are and more often say, oh, I heard you on the radio, and then have this blank expression when they, you know, next thing was, well, what did you hear? And they can't remember. So I knew when I hit it, because then 4 hours later, somebody could remember what it was they heard on the radio.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the tranquilizer dart. I'm gonna remember that one. So you've taken listeners to a lot of different places across Washington State, but you've also reported from around the world as well, Japan, Germany, and even the Korean demilitarized zone. Tell me about the stories that you told from these far-flung spots.
Well, one of my favorite things over the years was maybe once a year for quite a few years in a row, I'd figure out some kind of gambit fellowship, or maybe there was a foundation grant for this or that, that I could be a foreign correspondent just for a short time, for, you know, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, to a place connected to the Northwest. And that was generally Germany or Western Europe, or even more importantly, Asia. And we'd find so many great stories that were below the radar of our one correspondent in Shanghai or the one NPR reporter in Tokyo. And my favorite, it's hard to pick an all-time story, but probably my all-time favorite exotic place to go was an invasion tunnel dug by the North Koreans under the demilitarized zone to ideally, you know, infiltrate South Korea, which was, however, intercepted. And it was possible on a tour I took of the DMZ to go down there and tape, you know, 200 feet under the border between North and South Korea. And then, of course, I found people from Washington State there, both serving in the military and taking a tour.
Wow. I want to highlight one story that you brought us from Japan when you had the chance to cover the response to local business Costco arriving in Japan. And let's take a listen to that.
It's a fact that the Japanese make do with much smaller living spaces than North Americans enjoy. Shopper Fukia Atsuko says it'll be a problem to store her purchases. She pushes a shopping cart filled with eggs, oranges, trays of sushi and fish.
It's trouble.
It's trouble to put all this away, yeah.
Of course, yeah.
But the savings make it worthwhile?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love Costco.
She's shopping. And hey, we all have that issue, but Japanese apartments being what they are, probably a bigger deal in Japan, certainly trying to fit all those groceries. What has it meant to you, Tom, to cover your home in such a multifaceted way? Everything we've been talking about today, what has it meant to spend your career doing this?
Well, one interesting factoid about my career is that I've reported from every single one of Washington's 39 counties and every county in Oregon, of which there are 36 more. So I have a lot of pre-existing memories now associated with the places that I might visit in the future as a retiree. And I'm kind of curious if, you know, as a retired person, you can dial back your natural curiosity from being a journalist. Having ink run through your veins, and you're shaking your head. So I'm guessing.
I don't think you can dial it back, Tom. I think that everywhere you go, you'll be, you know, looking at the world with that curious lens and asking great questions.
And I'll give you an example. My first vacation or trip as a retiree next week will go, you know, short jaunt to British Columbia. But on the way, I'm proposing to make a short detour into Bellingham to see if I can spot a former Washington State ferry that I've previously reported on that's becoming quite the saga, an old boat and money pit that has, after it was surplused by Washington State Ferries, first landed in Olympia, my hometown. Somebody lost their shirt on that. It was repossessed, moved to Whidbey Island. That apparently wasn't a good landing spot, and I guess it's in Bellingham now, but ask me next week and we'll find out what it's doing there.
So in other words, you're investigating a potential story on your first vacation as a retired guy.
At least I'll know when I get the assignment where to go looking for this boat.
See, I told you, you can't turn it off. You can't do it. Tom, is there anything else that you want to add before we go? I know that, you know, you're going to have, as we've talked about, you are a storyteller. You're going to have a lot more stories to tell, even if you're not officially a KUOW and Northwest News Network reporter. Anything you want to say on your last day here to everybody who's spent years and delighting and listening to your reporting?
Well, I want to say so many thank yous, but the biggest thank you is to public radio's listeners and subscribers, because I've been a public radio reporter pretty much my entire career. And it is truly the case that your donations put gas in my tank and bought the batteries to keep my tape recorder going. So I'm grateful for everyone who was along for the ride and who made this great career possible. And I want to give a special thank you to all the news sources who answered my phone calls over the years, as we were talking about, and put their trust and their stories, or allowed me, gave me their stories, basically, and trusted me to bring them into the world. It's not always the easiest thing to talk about some of the things we talked about, but I am truly grateful for everyone who shared their stories with me and with the wider world by extension. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom Bontsi. It's been an honor to talk to you on your last day, and I know that there will be more stories from you in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I wasn't the only one who wanted to congratulate Tom on a job well done. KUOW staffers past and present shared messages thanking him for his reporting and mentorship over the years.
Hi, Tom. It's Austin. And wow, this is the end of an era. For so many years, so many decades, you've been really a spirit guide to your listeners when it comes to understanding first state government and state capital and the legislature in the past many years, this region. And I love the fact that you've never lost your sense of wonder about the Northwest, your appreciation for this region. And that has been your gift to public radio listeners for all these years.
Hey, Tom, this is Anna. Man, gonna miss you, and sure hope that you have just an amazing retirement and that you have as many adventures in retirement as you've had for public radio over these past decades. I was out talking to a farmer this morning. They said, yeah, Tom Bontsi, I've listened to him for years, and I really like his voice. So even in the far reaches of Eastern Washington, people remember your stories and love what you do.
Tom, this is Kim Malcolm. And although it took nearly 10 years of me working at KUOW to finally meet you in person, it was worth the wait. I have known your voice and your, well, the way you approach reporting, I've heard it for years, and like all of your listeners, I kind of feel I know a little bit of you in that way. And you definitely helped me get to know and appreciate the Pacific Northwest after we moved here from Texas. I was just a listener in my car listening to you, and that's how our relationship started. Thank you. Thank you for that. I will never look at a hydrogen-powered airplane or an Olympic cross-country skier again in the same way. So thank you for helping to set the standard for all of us in public media and for being such a mensch to boot.
Thanks to Austin Jenkins, Anna King, and Kim Malcolm for sharing those messages. Just a handful of the reporters, editors, and staff members from KUOW and the Northwest News Network who sent in well wishes to Tom Bontsi. And special thanks to Katie Sewell for compiling those messages. We'll see you soon, Tom. Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.